to check it out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you to indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Superhot and the Talos Principle.
Mm-hmm. One being the most innovative shooter I've played in years, and one being a awesome puzzle game.
Yeah.
They both have spoiler sections, so we're going to talk about both games in the first half and both games in the second half.
Yeah, it's some double trouble for you guys.
Yeah, but we should probably talk about Superhot has, I would think it's, as much as I really love Superhot, I don't think it is saying too much to say that the spoilers for Talos Principle are a little bit heavier.
Oh yeah.
Than the ones for Superhot, so we should probably talk about Superhot first.
Absolutely. So Superhot, which you guys might remember, we did the sort of tech demo that led up to this game last year. Mm-hmm. Which was just kind of a web browser game that ended up being super cool because it is an FPS where time does not move unless you do.
Or time moves very slowly.
Yeah. So very slowly.
Some of the stuff we'll probably have talked about before, but we decided that it is worth it to revisit the game.
Yeah.
Because it is like a full featured product now. It's still like, and we'll talk about it. Like it's feature rich while not being long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is I like the way that these are paired together because I had opposite kind of things with both these games.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, I spent 2 hours or 2.5 hours of Superhot and just wanted more. And then I spent 8 hours with the Talos Principle and was ready to be done.
Yeah.
But Superhot ends, but there's a lot of modes. Like I messed around with endless mode. I'm like halfway through the katana only challenge and stuff. So there's a lot of content there.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
It's a lot of Chibo, kind of fishing.
Yeah, which is still, it's still all right. Like it's not an expensive game and I had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah.
So tell me the basics and tell me what's cool about, what do you like about Superhot, Nick?
So real quick, just a shout out to John Colbert who gifted us both copies of Superhot.
Mm-hmm.
We were both interested in the game, but such a generous man gave us copies so that we wouldn't have to go out and purchase them ourselves. So thank you, John.
He's great. He's a super cool dude and we really appreciate that. We don't, you know, it doesn't, we won't necessarily do something just because we're gifted it, but if anybody gifts us anything, we want to make sure we point it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Superhot, it's developed by the Superhot team and, we didn't, recognize the release date before, but it was released on the 25th of February and it's coming out on Xbox One as well. Sometime this month, March. Mm-hmm. But it is primarily kind of this, it's got this super minimalist visual style, and everything kind of plays like a really open-ended puzzle game because of the time mechanics. So
it is a puzzle game.
Yeah,
like these are both puzzle games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is super cool to like see these different takes on that genre.
And on top of those things, which I mean, those are all true of the demo too. So we shouted out, you know, what's great about this in the demo as well. But this also builds on, I think, one really cool thing it does is actually the menu system, mm-hmm. which didn't exist before, where kind of the whole thing plays out as if it were an old terminal. And there's like other mini games and stuff you can play on there and kind of some cool demo-y stuff and chat logs that come up with a friend of yours who tells you about this superhot.exe.
Yes. And that's kind of how the plot unfolds, and mm-hmm. this idea of this like secret program that, you know, he's kind of trying to turn you onto. And you have to kind of do things to get in there and things start kind of going weird. But some of the mini games are pretty neat. The tree chopping one is cool. Yeah. Because it mirrors the way that Superhot works.
Right.
Like the tree chopping one also only moves forward when your character moves forward.
Yeah, but it urges you to go as fast as possible.
Yes. Yeah, you get more points for doing well. The main game does that in a couple of the different modes where you want to go fast. But for the most part, you have a lot of time to make up your decisions.
Right.
So the appeal of Superhot, just to refresh everyone's memory, and in case anyone skipped that episode, we have picked up listeners since then, so hello.
Absolutely.
Is doing things you could never do in a million years in an FPS. Just because time is so slow, and then you get to watch the replay of you just doing the coolest like action movie shit.
It's so good.
Like when Jason Bourne like, you know, grabs a gun and disarms it real quick and then, you know, throws it at somebody else who's coming and does all this stuff that you're like, oh, nobody has those reflexes.
Right.
That's true. Nobody could ever do that in real life. But in this game it's about that.
Yeah.
And it just becomes this like, what's the correct order of operations, mm-hmm. to get these things done? And if you want to go, once you get the bare minimum, it's like, it's fairly easy to play this as kind of like a cover shooter.
Yeah.
And like, there are a couple of later levels that are very hard that I did that
right.
With, but if you're being cool, you're taking tons of risk and you're just making like a sizzle reel. like you're doing that, you're making the kind of thing that like when people play shooters, they do these little like, you know, highlight reels on YouTube. You're making one of those. That's incredible.
Every time,
level.
Yeah. Yeah. It is super cool. Like weaving between bullets to get up to a guy who you then punch and then grab his gun and shoot him with it while you turn around and get everything comes out like so cool in the end. And that like the reward of playing everything back in full time is what sells the entire rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so fun. And on top of the chant of Super Hot the entire time you're watching it.
It's the best song of this year. the chant that comes at the thing is my favorite song of 2016. Because it just feels good because you've done it. Like you get that tension, that release of tension
mm-hmm.
when it happens. And it's like, it's not easy. Like it sounds like it'd be easy because time, but the fact that time moves slow makes it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, it's so like, you couldn't do this where time literally moved where you do. And that might be how the demo was. I don't remember. Because everything moves slow, you still have to be aware. So you have time to do these cool shit. But if somebody gets behind you and shoots you, like they're going to shoot you.
Right.
You know, like you have to be really situationally aware. And the big difference between this and the demo is it comes up with a lot of very devious situations.
Yes.
That are very tricky. Like it has that gentle, like, and Talos Principle does this too. And the example I always use is Portal, where like the game teaches you how to play it by introducing increasingly complicated situations that build on each other.
Mm-hmm.
It has this very gentle curve.
Oh, yeah.
Of doing that.
Yeah, it is super, especially considering that this only has, like, what, 10 levels? Like, it's not very long, but each one...
It's definitely more than 10. I don't know how many it is, but it's more than that.
It goes really fast, though.
It's about you... So to do the single-player version of Super Hot, it's about 2 hours to 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So it is very quick.
And it's super catching, too. Like, because everything is so fast, and, like, even if you lose a level, like, it's just, like, you're right back in it again going at it.
Yep.
So everything's super... Everything hot. Comes, yeah, super hot. But no, everything comes at you so like cleanly and like you said, a real gentle curve throughout the whole game. That I had zero problem playing this in one sitting. Like it didn't.
No.
Real fast.
I ended up playing in two just because I got it. I started playing it real late when I was like, I don't feel like playing any of the games I have to play. I'll get ahead on a assignment play for Comrade,
right?
Because I was sick of playing, you know, some game I was playing for Watch Out for Fireballs, and the so I just started playing it. So I ended up playing in two sittings, but like it's like an episode of a Telltale thing where it's like, this is an afternoon of mm-hmm. like treat it like a movie. You can go back to it, and like that introduces the dollar to time ratio thing that I'm not always a big fan of, but and you know, we brought it up with Firewatch, and it's kind of a thing here, but this is feels endlessly replayable.
Yeah,
to me, like it's like, yes, you get through it in about that much time, but all the challenge modes and then challenges you can come up with yourself, and then the time attack mode, which I didn't get very far in, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
Where you have to do whatever is the quickest possible way to get through it. You have to take risk because you can't take cover, essentially. You just have to be like a dynamo,
right?
Through it. One of the things that I noticed, and I don't remember if I mentioned this in the last time we covered this, but I love the way that like the situations and the little as minimal as they are suggest kind of action movies around them.
Yeah,
like they're all cliches, but they don't spell anything out. Like this actual story has nothing to do with what you're doing inside the simulation,
right?
Except for like a vague kind of implication that we'll talk about in the second half, but they feel like this is a scene in the middle of a Bourne movie.
And you get right into the middle of it too, and then it gives you that text prompt, like the level name essentially.
Yeah,
that's just like, this is the situation you're in, go.
Yep. The one where you're in the elevator,
mm-hmm.
like the three guys with guns, and you're like trapped in an elevator. That feels like it's straight out of like anything.
Absolutely.
You know, and like it just, I have to take, and it's just like that probably out of all the levels other than the last one took me the most tries. But by the end, it was just awesome. Like I just figured out the chess, you know, mm-hmm. like the order of operations that solves this.
Right.
And it's the other thing, the other comparison I came with it too from playing this one is that it reminded me a lot of Hotline Miami.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Which I don't know if we made that comparison last time, but like that's the same way Hotline Miami kind of plays like a, you can play like a puzzle game.
Right.
This does as well.
And it takes the same kind of cues in that, like if finding the order of operations, yeah, then we need to start you over real fast.
Yes, absolutely. Like we just did Titan Souls for Bonfireside Chat, and that game was a travesty for that. Like that was like a game I wanted to do for this show for a long time, and
right.
just because I wanted to play it. But like, boy, does like watching the animation and then waiting 10 seconds to get back to the boss kill that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is just like, you just immediately respawn. I think even says just like instant respawn
yep.
is the button. Like it uses the phrasing like, hey, you don't have to wait.
Yeah, and you have, you could hold down the R button. You know, it's an R button shortcut to restart when you died, and you're just kind of watching the commotion go on around you. But anytime in the middle too, when you're like, oh shit, I got in the same bad situation I was in last time, you can just hold it down and restart real quick too.
Yep, you can just try different things. It's really, really like amazingly satisfying. I love the way the enemies shatter.
Yeah.
It's like really, really effective and satisfying.
Yeah.
The game introduces some kind of mechanics later in the game. It's not really a spoiler because it's not plot related, but I feel like when it starts letting you jump into different people, it becomes not too easy, but like that just kind of when, you know, that kills that person.
Yes.
And it felt like, cause this might be like an example of like a game that has one mechanic, and this might be like, I would love some more levels for it, but this might be fully explored. Like them adding that jumping mechanic might not be necessary. Like the time moves when you do mechanic might be enough, and this might be the perfect like exploration of it. Like that is such a cool idea. It carries a game entirely on its own.
Yeah,
it doesn't need things added to it.
And you know, I ended up not even really using that all that much.
Me either.
It seems to always, all the levels after you get introduced to that mechanic, they all start in a way that the best way to start it is typically going to be to jump to someone, because it's purposely kind of putting you into a near death situation the second you start. But beyond that, it's still like you can very easily still beat. It doesn't add anything to like beating the level any cooler, it seems to me.
Yeah, it does. It feels like a patch. Like it felt like to me like they were trying to add up the difficulty, but wanted to
find a way to
make that okay. Yeah,
yeah.
Give you a way out. So like, it's optional, which is fine. It doesn't detract from things that much because it is optional. But to me, it just like kind of spoke of like the weird perfection of the mechanic as it is.
Yeah,
you know, like it just like it doesn't. You can't add anything to it without kind of making it a little bit worse.
Yeah,
you know, and you can't take anything away either. Like when I talk about like the way time moved a little bit when you're not moving too, like you couldn't take that away. It would ruin the game as well.
Yeah.
It'd be too easy.
Right.
So
what they did add, and there's some cool stuff they added. I believe the demo only had guns. So this adds, katanas that you mentioned earlier.
Did you know you can slice bullets in half?
I saw that later on. And this is another thing I wanted to mention that they added is there's a site for sharing your runs as GIFs.
Yeah.
Or like,
that's
web videos.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like that plus a little storyline around it, which is, you know, the story is very simple and doesn't take very long in between each level to kind of just get you along. So that's pretty cool. And then and then some mix ups in the, you know, change up in how the weapons work out and give you katanas and different weapon types. That's all this game needed to be fully realized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's super cool and it's fun to watch those because some of the things people have done already are like fucking awesome,
bonkers.
Going
to that site's cool.
So melee weapons, there also is a bigger, I think these existed before, but there's a much bigger emphasis on thrown weapons, which I love because it just like it adds that suggestion of a story, you know, like I'm not just in a featureless background, I'm at a bar,
right?
You know, how do I, like, when shit's gonna get real, how do I make it get real? You know, some guy's pulling a gun on me, what do I do?
It adds that Jackie Chan feel too.
Yeah,
like just making use of everything in your environment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point of comparison. And the action kind of feels like that too, because it's there's no you just kind of know everything that's happening
and there's no stopping.
Yeah, totally, like, which is another Jackie Chan thing, like nobody stops to deliver, you know, in the middle of a fight Jackie Chan doesn't monologue. You know, like he just like the fight ends and then he talks. And then here it just switches to super hot. But the taking melee weapons from people, I think melee attacks are added too, just in general, not just the weapons, but like
being able to
smack somebody and take their gun. And like, that's just like so fluid, like taking their gun and shooting them in the head after smacking it out of their hands. It's like so fluid and satisfying. Like, it's really good.
What we're saying, all this is coming to, is that this is by far the most innovative shooter I've played in years.
100%. It is the most innovative shooter I've played in years. And it is an unqualified recommendation. I think even at this price point, like it will go on sale at some point. Like this is the kind of game like that will happen, I think.
Yeah.
And then it's a 100% no brainer or 110% no brainer.
Yeah.
As of now, I think if this sounds cool to you and you can, if the idea of like a 2.5 hour game that you can replay is appealing to you for $20, 100%. Like,
also just play the old web one, and if you want more of that, then play this, and you will want more of that.
When we did it for the show, I remember liking it a lot, but not like, I feel like it was something that was missing, and then they did the full release in it, what I thought was saying, you know, like I like this a lot more than I like the demo. It was still, the demo felt like a neat kind of tech thing, and this feels like a game to me.
Absolutely. But the demo, like when the demo came out, you know, we knew they said right away that this is going to be eventually a full game.
Yeah.
And we both, I'm pretty sure in that episode, we were both like, I can't wait to see what else. Yeah.
I really, you know, I really want to see it. And it turned out that like they didn't, it wasn't like a thousand, you know, 1,000-hour campaign, because that wouldn't work for this mechanic.
Right.
It was a very, very tight, like simple, but still pretty cool plot. Mm-hmm. With this kind of cool framing around it. And yeah, it just kind of, it really worked for me. Like I had a lot of fun playing it.
Me too.
So, and I've gone back and played Endless Mode for a while, and Endless Mode is really fun.
I need to check out some more of the other game modes, but yeah, I mean, even just the storyline was enough for me to be like, oh, this is killer.
I feel like I'll play it again. Like I've played through the storyline twice now, because I played it and I played the Samurai Challenge or whatever, which is actually not too hard. Like it seems like it's really hard, but there are other challenge modes involved. And like, I feel like there's probably like, boy, like release a level editor for this.
Yeah.
Like that would be incredible. Like even if I just get to watch other people go through like super hard levels.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I think the one thing that they explore a little bit in some levels, but that I think people would explore more if they gave a level editor is cool. Like Z level stuff, like jumping down on people and stuff.
Well, there's that one where you're on the stairway with the katana, right. And that's great.
That is really good. And I want to see more of that.
Yeah, that would be really
I feel
sweet.
It doesn't play in enough on the game itself.
Yeah. And that was one where the game does everything. Like you could do this really cautiously and wait for those people to come up and kind of hit them around the corners. But the game is just like dangling a piece of candy in front of you. It's like, you could do that, or you could just jump off and kill these three guys with a katana right now.
Yep.
Like it is just like, it is a really good way to make you feel cool while not being that demanding. Like, I'm not super good at Twitch-based games, you know?
Right.
Like, that kind of, like, when people do really good shit in, like, Counter-Strike or what have you, like, it's impressive to me. Or even, like, Rocket League, right? Like, this gave me, like, really good Rocket League plays are outside of my scope.
But absolutely.
This kind of puts that kind of cool, kinetic feeling in the hands of anybody. And that's awesome.
Super cool.
Yep. So we'll have a little bit. We'll talk about the plot in the second half. It's not Shakespeare. It's not super deep, but we'll talk about kind of what happens just because it is fun to discover as you go through.
Yeah. I feel like they had fun with it. So I want to talk about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But let's go on and talk about the Talos Principle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Talos Principle is a first or third person puzzle game made by Crow Team, the guys who previously have only been known for Serious Sam series.
Mm-hmm.
And it is on Windows, OS X, Linux, Android, and PS4, but came out on the major platforms December of 2014. So
yeah, it's one of the older games we've done for the show, but it's something that I've been meaning to play for a long time. I like bought on a sale.
It's been highly recommended for a long time.
Published by Devolver Digital, the way that they do everything that's worth doing.
Absolutely. I don't know how they only pick up good IPs, but they do.
They do good work. And so the Talos Principle is a physics based kind of, it's a puzzle game in the vein of, and this was the way it was sold to me, was I was like, I was being grumpy about The Witness because I haven't played that, but like it doesn't look like something I would like.
Right.
And somebody was like, you know, you should play the Talos. And I was like, I like puzzle games are like Portal, because that's me being grumpy, and I do like puzzle games that are like Portal. And somebody was like, you should try the Talos Principle.
Right.
And that is like, those are the vibes I got from it.
It is definitely the closest thing to Portal since Portal, essentially.
Yeah. With a very different tone.
Yes.
Like it's not funny. It's much longer. I put in like 8 hours into it, and I feel like I was like halfway done. So for my money, it's a little bit long. That's something where we differ. And most people, it's just me. Most people don't think it's too long. It's just me being me. But it's a meatier, more like philosophically dense experience than Portal.
Yeah.
And more mechanically difficult, because there are so many fucking ideas in the Talos Principle. Like
that's true.
I feel like I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean like every single, almost every like toy or verb they introduced to you could support like a puzzle game.
Yeah, it definitely could. Like, and the way that, but the way they combine ends up being really good.
Totally, 100%. And they do that pretty early.
Yes.
They start like adding these on, and in the end, you're going to have like 6 or 7 different like objects or ways to interact with the puzzle that all work together, which is very interesting. And some of them just very much feel like, oh, like this is a puzzle game already. Like you get one of the things that allows you to make a copy of yourself and create a recording of what you're doing. So you have to, it's like, if you need to be in two places at once, that's how you do it. And it's not like, oh, we both need to stand on these two pressure plates. It's like, this person needs to be doing this while I do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is like, oh, that's a puzzle game. That's the swapper.
Yep.
You know, we did that. That could be a totally different game, but the kind of brilliance of this game is the way that they interact.
Absolutely.
I think. And weirdly enough, I found this out. The writer, the main writer for this game was the guy from The Swapper.
Oh yeah, there's a reference to it in an Easter egg somewhere.
Yeah,
I watched a video of Easter eggs.
Yeah, the Crow Team guys, who, and this makes sense when you think of them as being the Serious Sam guys, like just designed, you know, 100 puzzles or whatever, puzzles, and didn't have any linking stuff, and then brought in a writer really kind of late into the process.
That's amazing.
Isn't that interesting? And the way it works is really like, I didn't love the Swapper. I gotta put my hats off to that though. Cause like, if you're going to link together a puzzle game, this is a very compelling kind of storyline to link a bunch of puzzles together around.
Oh, and it's very clean. Like it all makes perfect sense. Like that, of course, that's how you'd make a puzzle game, a bunch of puzzles. All, if you're going to just string a bunch of puzzles together about a robot, there you go.
Yeah, I think he made it about a robot. I think he like added the, like, it was just a bunch of puzzles that were designed. The developers had a bot that they used to, like, kind of an AI to test puzzles,
mm-hmm.
Early on, and maybe that's where the robot thing came from. But it wasn't part. It was never part of the story. And the writer for the Swapper bot in the story, I think, is a guy named Tom Joubert.
Yeah,
I believe is his name.
That's what it looks like on Wikipedia here too.
So the and he brought in another guy as well who was a fiction writer.
Probably brought all the philosophical stuff.
He brought in the AI stuff. Like, he had written some games about AI. So it was kind of cool. This mix between like the philosophy of having copies of things, like the philosophy, and then another guy who did like AI stuff.
Yeah.
And those things put together.
Yeah. It's super clean. Like the way the storyline plays out, and there's nothing incredible about it. And they kind of know that right off the bat. Like you come into it, you're a robot, you're in this world that's glitching out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the plot is. Like, I don't have to tell you what the plot is. You know what it basically is.
That part of it is not like it. And the parts where it kind of feels like when the character's asking that, when I already know, mm-hmm. is a little bit annoying. But the thing that makes, I think, the plot stuff kind of noteworthy is how antagonistic and challenging it is leading up to that.
Yeah.
You know, like the way that, because the central kind of premise, without spoiling it, is like this idea of like, what does it mean to be human? You know, which is when you have AIs, that's what you're doing, is you're saying like, is this a person? It does all the same things a person does. Can we consider this a person?
Right.
The way that the game challenges you and like keeps track of your thoughts and kind of like tries to trick you and things like that. That stuff really works for me. That part of the narrative, it feels so divorced. Like it's like, yes, the plot is about robot solving puzzles, you're going to solve puzzles, but it's very rare that the narrative could be like a choose your own adventure, and then you just do puzzles between.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, going off the premise you start off with, which is obviously I'm an AI robot going through this puzzle world so that they can figure out how skilled I am, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's obviously the plot from the beginning. You can tell that just essentially from the first few puzzles. It makes super,
from looking at the cover.
Yeah.
Like it's not a surprise.
But so what you get from then the one kind of dialogue you have through this this AI that's in these computer terminals that's at everything is him being super philosophically questioning the state of, like Gary said, the state of human, but also just like being conscious in general. So it doesn't play into anything, but it makes a lot of sense that kind of two AIs of two different forms would be like, so what are we? Like,
yeah.
I think if you're having two AIs converse, neither of them being, you know, there's no human element here. They're trying to figure out what the hell they mean with only human knowledge to go off of.
Yes, that they've been programmed into, and they're aware enough to know like something is not quite up. Something is not quite right.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. You're right that it's divorced from what you're actually doing in every puzzle, but it is still an interesting aspect that they're going through.
It's like it's related in the idea that like, you know, if a machine can solve these puzzles that a human could do, like, mm-hmm. what does that mean for the two of them together? So like, I got that. That makes sense. It's just like, it's like you do puzzles for a while and then you get some narrative, and then you do some puzzles and then you get some narrative. Like they're not very related in that way. But like we should, since it's primarily a puzzle game, we should talk a little bit about like the basic verbs that you're doing for puzzles.
Absolutely.
So, because all we said is a 3D puzzle game, it's kind of like Portal, but there are no portals in it. Like, that's not what you're doing. And we mentioned the being able to record a copy of yourself, but
So the first, I think the first tool you get is the jammer. So there's these electronically controlled gates and robots kind of patrolling, they're kind of the most annoying piece of any puzzle game, basically, is that if you get too close to these proximity bots or these kind of turrets, that they will shoot you down and make you restart the
level. It's so weird that they front load the game with that, because like those are the weakest puzzles. When those things show up later, it's not my favorite thing.
I agree. Those are, yeah. I think those are the weakest puzzles. Yeah. But so that's the first tool you get. And I think the on top of that, you get cubes pretty quickly on as well, which are basically just
building
their
blocks.
They're
like
just building
weights
blocks.
Or ways to jump.
Stepping stones or,
And then the next thing is kind of ways to open doors, which is connecting power sources to kind of power receivers.
Yeah, with these line of sight laser beams.
Yes, and you can connect them multiple crystals to each other. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of where it came alive. Like the first part where there's the jamming things. Like those puzzles are really simple because it's the first set of puzzles.
Right.
But also like you could die, and like having fail states in a puzzle game is not my favorite thing. But once these kind of came around, like this is when I got into it. I love these things.
I think the puzzles, even starting right here, get to be like really well designed.
Oh, totally.
And a very nice curve too, I feel.
Yeah. Nothing was that, like there are a few stumpers. They were like really hard, and I like used like a hint system online where it's like I just need a hint. I never spoiled anything for myself, but I had a couple things like, you know, please point me in a direction. And there's a really good on Steam, there's a really good forum that has hints that are like you get one little like hint that's very minimal, and then the other ones are hidden by one's in hexadecimal and one of them is, what's the other one? You'd have to like translate it on another page,
right,
to read it, so you can't read on accident. So that, you know, shout out to those guys. That's really cool.
I think there's a guy in particular who's writing a bunch of guides that are very gradual hints, so that you can kind of just get to the point that tips you over the hump and then gets you the rest, so that you still feel like you achieved it. You were just told how to do it.
Well, and also the game has a hint system. It takes a while to get to it.
It takes a while to get to it. I haven't tried it out, but it looks to me like it's definitely something you want to reserve for real stumpers.
Yeah. Because
you only get a few of them.
And and I've seen on, like when I looked at the hints, one of the things the guy on Steam does is he tells you what hints would come from the game, and they're not very useful. It's not worth the effort. I did about 1,000 Tetronimo puzzles to unlock those things.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. I wish the game didn't do that so much either. It sounds like I'm down on it. I'm not. I really like it. But it really likes those like Tetronimo. You know, I don't know the name of that, but you could like play with them with, like there's a kids game version where it's just like put all these pieces in order.
Yeah, it's just basically the different, you know, Tetramino, the Tetris shapes, mm-hmm. The four block Tetris shapes, and making them all, you know, you have a certain set of them and you need to make them fit into a certain rectangle.
Yeah.
And that's used throughout the game as kind of a barrier to get through doors. And those I'm no big fan of those either, because it's pretty much just like there's no getting better at those. I feel it's just like you just keep playing with it until you eventually
it's testing your patience rather than your smarts.
So I'm not a big fan of
there's those. No epiphany moment with those. Like it's not like you're just like, oh, I finally get it. And like when they're just very rare, it's not that big a deal. But when like you to unlock the hint system, you have to do like four or five very hard ones.
Yeah, the hints is when it gets the worst.
Yeah, so you're doing those lasers. They introduce fans, so those are kind of like the propulsion gel in Portal. Yeah. Like that you can bounce things,
right? And so you can put blocks and laser beams and stuff up higher, or throw them over walls that you couldn't access before. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
You introduce like a thing that allows you to put like have you carry something,
yeah,
like on top so
that's
of your
introduced
head.
That's the last one introduced after the time recording thing.
Oh yeah,
because that tool only makes sense when you have the
you have
the
a buddy with
thing.
You
so that clock, like Gary mentioned before, you step up to it, you can go do a bunch of actions after you've activated it, go back to the machine, and all those actions will play out again, mm-hmm. as sort of a ghost version of you. And then you can do different actions with the same tool. So
yeah,
now
it's a ghost, but it actually
cubes.
Does the stuff. Like it's right. All the stuff actually happens.
And you can interact with all of them in the same way. So if he plants a cube somewhere, you know, you did that previously, you can jump on that cube. It actually exists.
Yes.
So with that, after that, they introduce a little platform tray thing that allows you to place things on your buddy's head or place yourself on your buddy's head. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to access, you know, things that would have been higher up or various other states like that.
Yeah, or elevate puzzle elements and things like that, which ends up being a big part. The game, like the puzzles are like wonderfully designed.
Absolutely.
I think that they're really like none of them. I was going to say before we got distracted by the hint system thing is like none of them, only a couple of them are real stumpers. Like most of them, like it is not unusual for me to go into a world and like do each of the puzzles in like less than a minute. You know, like it's just like this is very like I figured this out. This is very quick to make it happen.
Right.
But they still all feel good. And that plays into the theming of the game. Like, the god character in the game literally says, like, does it not feel good when you do this? That's like, yeah, it does. You know, like, and there's just so many, like, there's it's amazing how well they kept with it. Like, it's got the same kind of batting average as, like, a Portal does, or is like Portal 2. Like, Portal 1, I think, is perfect. There are no bad puzzles in Portal 1. Portal 2 has a couple bad puzzles. The Talos Principle has a couple bad puzzles, mostly having to do with, like, reflex-based things.
There are some reflex-based things, and anything that involves those proximity guys, especially later in the game where they try and really stump you with them.
Well, it's not that they, for me, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
It's not that they stump you with them, it's that they're at the end of long chains of things to do.
That's true.
So you end up having to do the whole thing again after just like, oh, I just like, I accidentally hit one key a little bit too much and got within this thing's very vaguely defined kill zone.
Right.
You know, those are the worst. Like, it's like I spent so much time setting up this like elaborate Rube Goldberg machine and just to have to do it again because I accidentally got blown up in a puzzle game.
Yeah. I mean, it is obvious that it's a circle around the guy within a certain proximity that his laser beams are showing, but he's also constantly moving all the time.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to avoid that most of the time.
And you have to be, you're doing other stuff, so you're not watching him, you know.
But some of them are particularly vicious on that are mainly like, you know, there's two that are at first they're kind of just going in the same path on either side of you know, some central path that you could walk between, but there's no gap, so you have to like freeze one up long enough to create a gap.
Them.
And we'll talk about stars in a little bit, but there's one puzzle after you are doing some star stuff that is really heinous in that there's like 10 of them, and most of them you kind of have to like navigate in that same way where you're like trying to get them to stagger, and then you're navigating and unlocking gates and then running back into a safe area again and then going through that gate, and you have to bring a jammer like throughout the whole puzzle. It's really vicious, and I know that like I looked at it for a long time, like that's the way it's meant to be solved. All you have is two jammers and a bunch of orbs and gates, so fuck those ones. Like that's the one puzzle element that I just have no keenness for. There was no good puzzles except for the one where you ride one of them.
The one where you ride one of them is great. Like, figuring that out was really fun.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, okay. They have no vertical detection.
Yeah.
Like those ones, there's one like about halfway through where the point is you have a bunch of jammers and you get up on high ground and you can look at down on like kind of a labyrinth.
Right.
And that puzzle made me mad too, because like what it just meant was running back and forth a lot.
That
I would see a door, but I couldn't really know where it was until I was down there. And you can't bring the jammers down there with you.
Right.
So that just felt like it was testing my patience. But like, there's only a couple puzzles that feel like that. It's a real triumph how many of them feel like really well designed puzzles.
Because there's a, like Gary said, the length of this is long, and there's a lot of puzzles in this game.
It is.
And
I mean, think of it. Like, I'm 8 hours in. I feel like I'm at the end of the second world, and I know there's like a final world after the third world. I'm past the end of the second world. I'm like near the beginning of the third world. But like, I just have so much left, and it's like 8 hours is a long time. Like, to me, to sustain this kind of game. And that, again, that's just me, but like, there's a lot of content here.
The fact that the puzzles are so good, and Wikipedia says over 120 puzzles. Some of those include the star stuff,
and Tetranimos too.
Yeah, and Tetraminos. So a lot of it's you know, not the base mechanics or extra stuff for you to go out and search when you really are really into this game. But the puzzles are so clean that if this is striking your fancy, for the most part, it feels like you just have a lot of really good content for the money. And that's pretty much what it felt like to me. I was like, oh, I got a lot of good stuff. It never felt like, at least they spread out the ones that are difficult, or, you know, overly difficult or overly irritating enough that the vast majority of the game just feels really good from start to finish.
It does feel really good. I think the reason why I ended up abandoning it, because for, you know, for the show, for what we're recording now, I haven't beat it yet, was just I wasn't enjoying playing it on a deadline.
That makes perfect sense.
I can't chug this game. Like, I would sit down and play it, and I would do, you know, each world is broken up into numbered kind of areas.
Seven levels per world.
And I could do like two levels, and then it's like, I'm done for now. Like, I need to go walk away. I wouldn't get stumped. I would just be like, I would walk into a new puzzle. I would see how big it was and how many different elements. I was like, oh geez, like I'm sure I can figure this out, but I can't do this right now.
I completely understand that, and I think some people are just gonna have different tolerances for how big of chunks they can take at a time.
If I was just playing it, if I wasn't playing it for the show, and I could just, and this is how I'm going to continue playing it because I like it, is just like do a couple areas like a week as opposed to trying to do like seven of them a day.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was like, and it's my own fault for not, you know, for getting behind on assignment play, but it is, you know, that's what happened. So that was really my only thing. Like, I like a smaller chunk kind of puzzle game.
Understood. Yeah.
You know, I like, in my mind, between this and Super Hot, like I like, you know, begging for more rather than stopping playing it, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's not because it does anything wrong. Like, it's all super great content. It's really, yeah. You know, it's really good. It's like really, absolutely. Really good. Yeah. So it is, hopefully that, you know, made it make sense. It's hard to explain puzzles. But the, it is definitely recommended. It's a full priced game. It's $40. Mm-hmm. It goes on sale a lot. Yes. Usually for like 33% off, so it ends up being like $23.
Or I think I ended up picking up it for like 15 during the winter sale or something.
Or maybe I was gonna say 27, but yeah, 15 is really good. I think even if you like this kind of game, if like you're a puzzle dude, like you probably have already played it, but if you haven't, like this is the game for you. I think you'd really like it, and it's probably worth $40 because it is a lot of content.
This was a game that's been on my radar forever, and I just never got around to it. And like I knew I was gonna like it, mm-hmm. but. By the time I finally got to it, I was like, holy shit, why haven't I played this already?
Yeah, it's very good. It's really, really good.
I think that that's pretty much all I think we want to talk about before spoilers. Mm-hmm. Maybe one more thing. There's also kind of storyline-based stuff. There's QR codes kind of left around mm-hmm. by previous AIs, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I found one of yours.
Yeah, you can find like paint buckets. Yeah, you can find paint buckets, leave... you get to select from pre-set up messages, very Dark Souls-y. It's not nearly, you know, not nearly as robust as Dark Souls' pick system. You basically have like, I don't know, 25 phrases you can pick from.
It's not helpful at all.
It's not helpful at all. They don't do anything. Yeah. But you get to leave your mark on the world, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, which is it's a novelty. It would have been, giving that a more robust vocabulary, we could actually give hints for other players. I think that would have been cool. If you constructed the vocabulary in a way that you couldn't give away the solution.
Yeah,
you know, I think that would have been cool, but
there's like one of those, and it's "Have you tried crossing the beams?" which is never useful for anything.
It's so weird that like there's just one of them that is like, you know, actually a thing.
Yeah.
There's also a DLC for this called The Road to Gehenna that mm-hmm. we will probably cover at some point this year.
Yeah, I definitely want to play it sometime soon. So I'm sure I'll make you do it some point so we can cover it.
I would like to finish the main game. So that means this could be in 6 months. But I would like to, and also that gives us a break too. But I would like to cover that at some point as well.
100%.
So
So let's get into some spoilery stuff. But first, admin things. You can always find us on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or twitter.com@comradepodcast and come hang out with us, follow what we're up to. Each episode release will be posted there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to support the show and the network financially, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and do so. That is a huge help. I want to bring a quick shout out to something that's coming up just because it needs to go up on every show. And all the details are not in place at this time of recording. But check out the duckfeed.tv because on the weekend of the 25th, some members of the community are doing a charity live stream.
It's pretty much the cutest thing I've ever heard of.
It is.
I saw the announcement. I hadn't heard of it before that. And I was so enamored. It made me like blush with just the biggest smile. But yeah, I reached out to Sporky. He's got all the slots filled. So we are going to have a whole weekend of community guys streaming stuff. Benefiting Transactive, the same thing we do for DuckStream.
Yep. So just a kind of a spring version of that. Cole and so I cute. Are not as, you know, are, I'm going to do a quiplash. For a couple hours on Saturday, but we're not as heavily involved.
Yeah,
but still sounds super cool. There's a Rocket League tournament in there. There is a Sporky is doing like I think that he's doing like a full, like pretty long like JRPG kind of thing.
Nice.
Like they're doing some different kind of stuff that we didn't really stream, which is super cool and it's for a great cause. So details will be if you go to duckfeed.tv, you'll be able to see something on the front page there probably by the time this comes out. And and if you're able to give, do so. And if not, join in, watch, and kind of lend your support.
Yeah, so much love to the DuckStream community. This is the cutest, most amazing thing I've ever seen. I can't believe you guys are doing this.
Yeah, it's very, very awesome. And it's like it's not like we didn't say like, hey, why don't you guys do this?
Right.
Like, they just came and said, hey, would you mind us? You know, essentially all me and Cole are doing are like loaning the duck prefix.
Yeah.
And talking about it on the show. It's cool too because we'll end up doing it. We'll give it to Transactive right away, of course. But then you know this is adding up to our yearly total, so maybe we can finally knock OHSU out of the running for the biggest donor.
Absolutely,
that's our goal for 2016 is to be the biggest donor to that organization and beat out Oregon Health and Science University or whatever.
Beat out this massive collection of buildings on the hill in Portland.
You know, the biggest science and medical college and. In Pacific Northwest. Let's see if we can destroy them. And if we can't do it by making us gain more money, we'll do it by making them gain less. But yeah, yeah, so definitely go to duckfeed.tv after you hear this and check out that and support if you're able.
Yep, and really, you know, it. Tell your friends, rate and reviews on iTunes. You guys know the drill. Mm-hmm. Let's get into some spoilery stuff, Gary.
Let's do it. So let's I mean, it's, there's a little bit less than we thought, like, because you're right, in the Palace Principle doesn't really hide it. Like, you can figure it out if you're not an idiot.
Right.
So there's maybe a little bit less than I thought there was, but let's talk about Superhot real quick.
Absolutely.
And then you can tell me what happens at the end of the Talos Principle.
Sure. So Superhot. Mm-hmm. The plot line stuff is kind of cool. So you start getting chats from someone who knows you're running the EXE, and your friend kept giving you a couple different cracks at first. Mm-hmm. But then when you try and type at him about what's happening to you in the game, it's replacing all your words.
It's real cool. We're doing a game at some point called Pony Island that does the same thing.
Nice.
And it's such a cool trick, like, where it's like, my finger didn't do that. I like that a lot.
But yeah, so Gary, what happens if when as the plot continues and this mysterious people keep chatting you at?
So the organization, the people in the machine or whatever, started hinting at, like, you don't really know what you're doing. You don't know really what's happening. They start intimating that they're watching you. That they see you, and when they show you visions of yourself, it's in the same super hot mode.
Right.
The general thrust of it and the implication is that you're actually killing real people.
Right.
You are an agent. You've been downloaded into someone's head. Like, you get put into someone's brain, and when you do, they start looking like this. It looks like a video game, and you're used as kind of a Manchurian candidate.
Yeah, it's Ender's Game or thermonuclear war, all that stuff.
Yes, yeah. And essentially, it just kind of continues with that. You keep playing because it's a video game, and you keep playing even though they tell you not to, and because it's so fun. And then eventually, they recruit you for this organization. You find yourself in your, at your computer, and you look like you live in a mall. It's real weird. But you find yourself at your computer and kill yourself, and yep. Then now you are a digital entity. You live to be kind of put as an assassin, a super hot assassin. And then the kind of big twist is it starts telling you how to create more of you, which is to create this forbidden fruit of this game. Like, start telling people, and the game tells you to say the exact same thing your friend told you.
Yep.
In the beginning. So the implication or the what it says is that, like, that happened to your friend. That's how he got you into super hot, is by telling people that super hot is the most innovative shooter you've played in years. and that's all you need to say, and to share your clips on their website to get people into this game, because that's how we recruit agents for this thing.
Yeah, it's really cute. Like, I that plot device has been used before, that the game is real and stuff, but I really like how they ended it up. Like, if you heard about this game by this means, then obviously that's by someone who has been downloaded into the machine.
Yes,
it's cool.
It reminds me, it's the same way that like Call of Cthulhu, or like the individual story Call of Cthulhu, or the Slenderman mythos stuff actually works, where, like, once you start hearing about the thing, you are already kind of part of it.
Yep.
Like, it puts anybody who knows about it as being part of the actual thing. Like, you're already kind of, it's too late.
Yep.
And that's really cool. Like, the way it came to you, like, reviewers could be part of this. You know, we could be part of this. Like, it's just like the real life is in the fiction in a super cool way.
Yeah,
I think
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. It's slight. They don't spend tons of time on it, which is great.
Yeah.
It's cute.
It is cute.
Cute's a good word. That's the word of the day.
Yeah, it's a good word. let's talk about Talos Principle a little bit. The story's divulged to you over time. I mean, you get the general gist of it, that, you know, you're obviously an AI kind of going through a training course to see what your progress is. And you can see QR codes of, like, guys who didn't make it, like, where they ended. They kind of leave a timestamp behind of, like, oh, they couldn't take it. Like, this is the end of the road for them. But there's kind of this conflict between Elohim, who's kind of the god voice that keeps talking to you, who wants you to not explore this tower. It's put in your way, but don't explore this tower.
Yes.
And so there's kind of three endings. So there is an ending where you just follow what Elohim says and go through the last door that opens up in the last world after you finished all the base puzzles. And Elohim, like, gives you get this, like, ascending animation, and then it kind of goes through this printout of, like, you passed all the tests, everything, except there's one test, and it says independence test failed. And the game restarts, and you're just a new version. The version number's been incremented, and you start over the game again.
That's a bummer ending.
That is a bummer ending.
I wonder what happens. I wonder if people have replayed it from the top from there. To see if anything's different.
As far as I know, nothing's different. The point of it is, and you can always go back to your last saves is the point. So you can always restore your saves from previous. So the point is to be like, for you to notice that it says your independence module failed, and that means you're just going to go through the cycle again.
Yeah.
So obviously, despite Elohim keeps telling you this, they're testing to see if you'll go to the tower, because that's what you're supposed to actually do.
Yeah, it's another puzzle.
You're supposed to disobey. So then you do the tower, and each floor of the tower has its own puzzle. It has one like game-like puzzle, tends to be a fairly difficult one, and then a fucking Tetranemo, and then... and as you get all the way up to the top of the tower, while Elohim's kind of yelling at you, you actually have to go ascend the tower. Ascending the tower is its own one big puzzle at the top with, one of the AI that you keep seeing QR codes from is locked in the gate, and if you use a jammer on it, it's kind of a co-op puzzle that the AI is helping you complete.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another AI that's actually on Elohim's side trying to fuck up your progress a little bit.
So I saw that on online. What does he do to fuck up your progress?
There's just like a couple things where like you have a very clear shot to point this laser at a receiver to open a door for your buddy, and then they like flip a switch and it blocks the way, and now you have to go find another way to do it. It's obviously built into the puzzle, and he's just like, you know, using tools available to him, but it is pretty funny how it plays out, because you just see an AI like fucking with all your stuff. You're like, God damn it. All right.
Gotcha.
But then you make it to the top, and then Elohim kind of talks to you and tells you, you know, hey, obviously this is what you're supposed to do. I kind of got a little worked up and didn't want this to end, because you finishing this means it's over, essentially. So you kind of get some breakdown of Elohim, and then you, as the story's kind of been telling you throughout, if you've been reading all the terminal stuff, that there is a actual robotic body the first AI to complete the whole puzzles will be put into, and they will essentially inherit the earth.
Yes.
they will be the last remaining vestige of humanity in physical form. So then you get an animation of you emerging from this tank in this big empty huge science center, looking over a overgrown city empty of people.
Yeah, because there's a virus.
Yep, that wiped
that came
out.
Through, and like kind of the theming leading up to this, they spend a lot of time. There are these kind of audio logs. Most of the story is told through these library terminals and these kind of antagonistic, you know, conversations with another AI.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this this element where there are people kind of waxing on and are sad about this idea of like leaving, you know. What's left behind,
right?
You know, like what happens when we die? That's it for us, you know. And how do we know other civilizations by their works? Like, what can we do to like make this continue to be a thing?
Yeah,
which is ultimately your purpose, but like that's your clue.
Yes,
this is what you're doing. It
becomes clearer and clearer through reading all the story stuff. As you progress through levels, that everybody was being killed off, and I think in World C especially, like you get a lot of text files of just like people discussing what they're doing, spending time with family because they know this is the end, and there's like one person who's just obsessed with this project, who this is their last roommate, like this is what they want to leave behind in the world, is the project that you're a part of.
Mm-hmm. It's not that dissimilar to Soma, in that respect.
So one more thing before we end the episode, because this is running a little long, but there's a lot of Easter eggs in this game, most of which are super, super easy to pass up. I caught maybe a couple of them, but I went through and watched the video someone made on YouTube of all of them. There's one in particular, though, that's really good. They mainly deal with like exterior level stuff, kind of finding unique ways of jumping onto over walls and stuff it looks like you're not supposed to do. Kind of in the same vein as Portal, actually, but this is explicitly for Easter eggs and not for, you know, the base game itself. But there's one where you get down into this, you have to find a crowbar and you can break your way into something, you know, Half-Life reference with the crowbar. You get in and there's a bunch of boxes. There's like the companion cube references other games and stuff. But one of them is a serious sandbox that is exposed. And when you hit it, a cat comes out and runs off into this little hole. If you found that Easter egg during your run, then that ending cinematic of you emerging from the tank and going exploring the world, it matches the cover art. You're holding a cat.
Oh, that's, yeah, because I know that was on the cover.
That's not there in the game unless you discover this particular Easter egg.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I dig that. A bunch of some of the other ones are like video game, other video game references.
A lot of references. There's references to the Swapper, tons of references to the Serious Sam series. I got a whole playthrough and didn't see one like immersion breaking Easter egg the entire time. But there's so fucking many of them if you're looking for them, which is incredible. Like how they managed to blend those two of having a ton of Easter eggs, but all of them be just out of sight enough to not see if you're not looking for them.
They're very hidden. I think that one of the things, and this is the game, you know, there's a lot of space between everything in the game. And it was like, that was enough to discourage me from doing that much exploration, really. Like where I just like didn't want to like just explore big empty spaces.
After the first couple worlds, you pretty much ignore it.
Yeah. So eventually it becomes, you know, makes more sense to do it.
Yeah.
Or it makes sense to hide things there rather, is what I mean.
And a lot of that space is used up for the star puzzles too and things like that. But some of the Easter eggs are actually incredibly plain sight if you know where they're supposed to be. So good job, guys. Like there's some really good level and puzzle design. I'm a big fan of this.
It's pretty neat. I'm gonna watch that Easter egg.
There's like a 5-piece video that one guy did. One for A world, B world, C world, and then two that are kind of ones he missed and stuff that's kind of overworld.
Yeah, I will definitely check that out because that's pretty rad.
It's crazy, yeah.
Into it. I like it. It's real good. I'm looking forward to playing the rest of it. I don't feel like that bad about having the story stuff spoiled for me. Like I already know it's neat.
Yeah, I don't think you missed out on anything. Yeah. And the game, the puzzles themselves and the gameplay itself is enough to carry.
You can't really spoil a puzzle without knowing the solution.
Yeah.
Like you can't, like knowing the context around a puzzle doesn't often spoil it.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Cool.
All right, guys. We will catch you next time. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Good night.